You're listening to the newest episode of Adrift, written and read by Doyce Testerman. Every few days, we'll bring you another installment of the story, as it's written, as part of an insane overcomplication of what should be a simple first draft writing project. I'd like to invite you to come by my website, doycetesterman.com, to join in the conversation, or you can contact me directly at doyce@doycetesterman.com. With all that said, let's get back to the story. Chapter 5. As soon as we were out of sight of Torres Grove, I fished the silvery pouch of mixed herbs and plant life out of my jacket and opened it. The dry scent hit me like a bomb, making my mouth water and my stomach turn. "Do we have any water left?" I asked John. He handed me one of the flexible canteens and watched as I poured a measure into the attached cup over a thick pinch of the mixture. "She conjured up some magic tea?" I explained his sister's instructions while I stirred the cup with my finger. He said nothing, then reached for the pouch. I handed it to him, and he sniffed at the contents, nodded to himself with a sour expression, pulled a thick pinch out of the pouch, and tucked it into his cheek. I took the pouch back when he offered it and stowed it in an inside pocket. Once that was done, I took a drink of my own brew and nearly spit it out. The tannic sting of the steeped water burned at my already damaged mouth. It felt like I was drinking jump fuel mixed with wood alcohol. John watched my expression with a not-so-well-concealed smirk.
"Not quite as hard on you when you just suck on it," he drawled. "Saliva cuts the sting a bit."
"Well, how the hell was I supposed to know that?" I growled. "Come to think of it, how did you?"
I took another sip and grimaced at the pain.
"And why didn't you tell me?"
John sniffed and shifted the wad in his mouth from one cheek to the other.
"This particular remedy isn't one of Tor's inventions," he said. "It's an old family recipe. My daddy used to keep some handy pretty much constantly when his hip went bad. This is how he took it. He used to say no kind of hurt was worth drinking the tea."
He glanced at me.
"I figured she had you mix it up that way because you pissed her off, and it's probably good odds you deserved it."
"Your familial loyalties are touching," I muttered.
"Also, it's a damn sight more potent that way, which you obviously need."
That was hard to argue with. The tea was already easing some of the knots in my back, but I didn't particularly want to get into a discussion about what I may or may not have said to Tora back in the shop. John had never been entirely sanguine about our relationship. I drained the last of the cup, scooped the dregs out with two fingers, and used the medicinal chewing as an excuse to let the conversation drop. No one seemed to mind. Between the distance, halfway around the bazaar, and my own hampered speed, I had plenty of time to think during the hike to Mac's current location, but the opportunity hadn't offered me any new insights. That wasn't much of a surprise. I'd had almost a month to turn things over while Deirdre had plotted jump after jump of our route back to the drift, and I hadn't done much more than reminisce about the past or fantasize about the future. As harsh as John's comments had been on the ship, they weren't wrong. I wanted this part of our trip to be over. I wanted to find Caitlin, and, well, that was about as far as anything resembling a plan actually went. Beyond that point, it was all daydreams and nightmares, ranging from the hopelessly romantic and trite to the self-indulgently morbid, and playing out all the notes in between. When things got too dark inside my own head, I'd replay her message, listen to her voice, and remind myself that she had called me. It helped, as long as I didn't think too much about what might have happened that would have forced her to do that. John slapped at my shoulder, then pointed with the same hand when I looked up.
"That look familiar?" he asked.
Following his gesture, I saw what looked like a giant metal cube standing in our path, squinted, and laughed. Bilibil, Andy, and Dobie, whatever, glanced back at the sound and looked ahead as well. The cube in question was actually a collection of oblong shipping containers stacked at least 6 levels high and 2 rows deep. Although identical in shape, each container sported a different color scheme ranging from starkly utilitarian blacks and grays and rust reds to heavy graffiti to some kind of jungle camouflage to one that seemed to be made entirely out of a transparent aluminum. At least 2 looked as though they were built for sealed underwater use, probably on Quintus or Martius. Aside from their past lives, they were now part of a larger whole, reincarnated as part of an edifice that was covered over every square meter with crude handprints and every color in the visible spectrum, and, knowing the owner, several that weren't.
Five Finger Freight, John said, a bemused expression on his face. Son of a bitch finally did it.
My comm beeped before I could answer.
Go.
Captain.
Deirdre's voice was faint, but entirely audible, though it sounded like she might be shouting to be heard. You have been out of radio contact.
Oh, I looked at John, who rocked his head back and forth and gestured back at me. I frowned. We had some difficulties, but we made it to Manifold.
There was no response, and I thought we'd lost the Binturong signal until Deirdre finally said, And you are both unharmed? I started to say, but cut off at John's sharp gesture.
We're fine, he stage whispered. We're just fine.
Still watching him, I keyed the comms. We're fine. No harm done. Again, a long pause. Then,
affirmative.
I looked a question at John, who shook his head. I rolled my eyes. Did you get my message through?
I've tried to contact your acquaintance 27 times as of the last hour mark, came the immediate reply. There have been no responses.
Using the ID I gave you? I asked.
Affirmative, replied Deirdre.
I frowned. Well, we're here, so we'll figure it out ourselves. Calm out.
Captain,
said Deirdre. Her tone was clipped.
Will you rendezvous with the ship after your meeting?
My frown deepened. Well, it depends on the meeting, I said. Calm out. I flipped off the comm. Was she acting off, or was that just me? I looked at John.
What?
John's expression was a mix of bemusement and annoyance. His mouth actually hung open a few centimeters as he looked at me, but he said nothing and turned away.
I followed him. What?
I'm getting paid to be a translator, he muttered.
I looked at him as we walked toward the particolored metal block. That doesn't even make any sense.
She's worried about us, he growled, and she wants to know when we're going to come back to the ship.
I raised my eyebrow. He caught my expression and scowled.
Don't believe me. Fine.
It's Deirdre, I said.
I know.
It's Deirdre, I repeated. She doesn't get worried. She barely gets concerned, and she never wonders when we're going to come back to the ship. That would be like...
I looked up as though I'd spot a good analogy floating overhead.
That would be like the ship missing us.
Maybe when she came on board, John said. That was a while ago, especially for her.
I shook the idea away. Where do you get any kind of insight into...
It's not hard to miss, John cut in, if you pay attention.
I clenched my jaw. I pay attention.
Sure, John said. Girl as smart as that, you don't think she learned how to care about people now that she's out in the world?
He left me with that and picked up his pace, closing the last few meters to the gangplank that led up into Five Finger Freight. A ship's cargo bay door, welded onto the side of the container block so that it could be retracted like a drawbridge to cover the main entrance into the thing. Mac was walking down to greet us.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Adrift, written and read by Doyce Testerman. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.com. Adrift was first conceived as a serialized flash fiction story told 140 characters at a time via Twitter, and in fact continues today and every day as an ongoing story. You can check it out on Twitter at www.twitter.com/finris or on my website at doystesterman.com/adrift. Our intro music is Invisible Walls by Revolution Void off their album Increase the Dosage, available from Jamendo.com. Our outro music is Struttin' by Triad, also available from Jamendo.com. There are many people to thank for their help and input on this project, but the two I'd like to specifically mention are my wife Kate and Tim White, perhaps best known in this arena for his Return to Northmoor podcast. Without their help and support, this project simply would not exist. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Signal no noise. Global. Music checks get it all for free. Major labels don't get me. Contracts kiss my industry. I'll sing the system to its knees.